The Yeshiva Gedolah of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
The Rambam writes in Perek Gimel, Hilchos Megillah v'Chanukah. The Ba'isheni Kishimolcha Yovan Golzruk Zeres al Yisrael during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, when Yovan, the ancient Greek empire, reigned. They reigned over the land of Israel, and they reigned over most of the world. Gozru gzeiris al Yisrael ubotla dosom v'lehinicho isom lasik betore b'mitzvus. They made decrees on Israel and they annulled the statutes of Israel, and they did not allow them to occupy themselves with Torah u'b'mitzvus. Uposhtu yodom b'memeinom u'b'vineisehem, and they stretched out their hand and they took from them their wealth, their money, their material wealth, their daughters. V'nichnasu l'heichel u'potse b'y pirtzeis v'timu atahores. They went into the Beis HaMikdash and into the Kodesh, and there they defamed the Kodesh, and they made what was pure impure. Tzar lahem liYisrael me'ed mipnehem, v'lachatzum lachatz godl, and they became a great agonizer to Israel, and they brought great affliction upon Israel. Atcherichem aleihem elokei aviseinu, until the God of our fathers had compassion on them. V'heishiom miyodom v'atzilom v'hitzilom, and they saved them and took Israel out of their hands. V'govru b'nei hashmonei kohanim hagdolim, and the sons of the Hashmonoim, who were the Kahanim Gdolim, the great priests. Baharogum, Bahorgum Veishia Yisrael Miyodom. And they went and they killed the Yavonim and saved Yisrael from their hands. Be'amidu Melech Mina Kahanim, Bechozru Malchus Yisrael Yesra Mosaim Shonim Adachur Ben Hasheni. And Israel put up a new king from the Kahanim, and the kingship returned to Israel for more than 210 years, until the Churban Bais Hasheni, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And then the Rambam carries on to tell us about the Nes, the particular miracle that took place. Kishagov Yisrael al-Evehem ba'obdum b'chof hei b'chodish kislev oyo. The victory took place on the 25th of Kislev, and they entered into the Kodesh, v'lemotzu shem and tor b'migdosh, and they didn't find any pure oil in the Migdosh. Elapach echod, only one flask, and it was only sufficient to light for one day, and with this they lit the neiresh, the candles of the marocha, of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, and it stayed lit for 8 days until they were able to make new oil, new pure oil. And because of this, as the sages of that generation enacted that beginning from the 25th of Kislev should be Yemei Simcha v'Halal, days of rejoicing and days of Halal, of thanksgiving. Umarlikin b'hen aneres b'erev al pischi abati mechol laila v'laila, and that we should light candles in front of the houses every night, Mishmona Haleleis Lahareis Ulagaleis Haneis, to show and to reveal the great miracle that took place. And these days are called Chanukah. Now, this war, which took place between Israel and the Yevonim, was from the greatest wars that Klal Yisrael in their history had to face. And it was a great test of their strength. As we say in the Alanisim, in the Heidon, the Shemayin Esrei, Masarte Giborim Yad Chaloshim, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave the mighty into the hands of the weak, Rabim Yad Ma'atim, multitudes into the hands of the few, Tmeim Yad Tohorim, the impure into the hands of the pure, Rishoim Yad Tzadikim, the wicked into the hands of the righteous, Mizeidim Yad Oskei Serosecho, the arrogant into the hands of those that study Torah. But aside from the fact that it was an enormous struggle physically, it was a great, great military struggle, and this is all itemized in books such as Megillas Chanukah and other such books. It also, though, was an enormous spiritual war and a spiritual test for Israel, because many, many Jews fell to the wayside under the influence of the Greek culture and Greek civilization, where they forsook the Torah and mitzvahs and they assimilated themselves amongst the Greeks. In the Megillas Chanukah, for example, is written, Antiochus reigned over many kingdoms, and Judea was among them, and he was an exceeding great king. And in those days there came forth out of Israel transgressors of the law, and persuaded many, saying, let us go and make a covenant with the Gentiles that are round about us. For since we were parted from them, many evils have befallen us. This is what they claim, that our only success will be if we make a covenant with the Gentiles around us. The Greek Empire was rising to unparalleled heights. And if we want part of that success, we have to become part of them. We have to become like them. And the saying was good in the eyes of many Jews. And certain of the people went forward to the king, and he gave them license to do in accordance to the ordinances of the Gentiles. And they built for themselves a place of sport, exercise, and entertainment in Yerushalayim and Jerusalem, according to the laws of the Gentiles. They made themselves uncircumcised. This said it states they made themselves uncircumcised means two things. The Gemara tells us. Firstly, they gave up circumcision of their children. But secondly, even the adults would do various things to themselves. Some say even with surgery, to make themselves look uncircumcised in order that they would look like the Greeks. They forsook the Holy Covenant, and they joined themselves to the Gentiles and sold themselves to do evil. That was the first phase. This they did voluntarily. Now there was a second phase. As Antiochus was gaining strength in the world, and he had a great victory over Egypt, and he came back, he decided that he will go up against Israel and Jerusalem with a great multitude. And he went into the Beis HaMikdash and so forth. And he made a great slaughter. And there was great mourning in Israel. Then he wrote to the whole kingdom, to his whole kingdom, saying that all should be one people. Why? Actually, the Greek Empire spread over many, many nations. He said, why should we be many, many nations, each one differently? We'll all be one. It was against separate development. We'll be a melting pot. Now this was a strategy of many big, many great rulers, because as long as there was separate development, there was always the fear of a rebellion, of an overthrow. But when everyone becomes like one, so then you don't have many nations, many peoples living together on one land. We should all be one people, and each one should forsake his own laws. And he sent letters by hand of messengers into Jerusalem and into the cities of Judea, that they should follow laws strange to the land. They should profane the Shabboses and the Yom Tovim, and they should leave their sons uncircumcised, and they should eat all types of foods that hitherto they were not allowed to eat. And whoever shall not do this according to the word of the king shall die. And they should start taking up the Greek customs, and they should also take up the Greek idolatry, and so on. So it was not only a physical war, but it was a great, great spiritual struggle in which many, many of the Jews fell to the wayside. The fact is, Matishohu and his family, when they stood up, they were at that time not very popular. In fact, they were going contrary to popularity. They were a small band. And they stood up and they said, all of those who are loyal to the ways of our fathers and forefathers and are willing to give their lives against the mighty Greek Empire, follow me. Follow us. And they had to flee into the mountains. And they were a small band. And they used to go and attack not only the Greeks, but they also would attack Jews that were traitors, that were going over to their sides. And this is what is meant when it was Masarta Rabim Biyad Ma'atim, that the mighty and the many were given into the hands of the few. Rishoyim Biyad Tzadikim, the wicked into the hands of the righteous. And Zaydi Biyad Eiski Seresecho, the arrogant into the hands of those who were loyal to Torah. Now, in order to understand better what went on, we have to understand just who the Greek Empire was. We've given many shurim in the past on this, so we will not elaborate too much this evening on that. The ancient Greek Empire was one of the four empires that our sages tell us that was to rise up and attempt to conquer the entire world and also to conquer Israel. And Daniel, the prophet, had a dream of these four great empires. And when he saw, each one he saw in an image of a wild beast that came out of the sea. And when he saw the image, the beast, which would represent Yomon, this Greek empire, amongst other things, he saw them as an image of a leopard, a nomer, and made out of nechoshes, copper. And it had four wings. Now the Maral explains. Each empire had a particular quality in which it was unique in. The particular quality of this empire, of this nation, was that of enormous wisdom. The sages tell us, if someone will tell you that there is wisdom amongst the nations, tamin, believe him. Ki yesh chokhma bagoyim. And this specifically was referred to the ancient Yevonim, the ancient Greeks. They were the greatest of the wise amongst all of the nations when it came to the wisdoms of the physical world. The fact is, they were an av lochokhma. They served as the cornerstone of physical wisdoms that the world was going to inherit. Now, many times we, especially for modern Western culture, we like to pride ourselves how modern we are and how wise we are and how advanced we are. And many times we like to think of the old ages as dark ages. This is all Roman propaganda. I'll just read a few notes to get an idea of what the ancient Greeks were. There was a man called Hippocrates. He lived approximately 500 years before the Common Era, which is a long time ago. He is known as the father of Western world medicine. He identified cancer. Again, we're talking 2,500 years ago. He identified cancer and named it cancer. Cancer is a Greek word which means crab, because he saw the disease spread out like a crab. He also gave the name diet. Diet is a Greek word. And he was the one who developed the foundations for nutrition and diet. The Hippocrates Oath is still taken today in many nations by doctors. There was another great man that they had, who was called Aristotle. Aristotle was known as the father of philosophy, of which modern philosophy is built on his foundations, of science, of which modern science is built on, and of astronomy, which modern astronomy is built on. He and his colleagues, I'm quoting this from various sources in encyclopedias and so forth, he and his colleagues proved to themselves, to their own satisfaction, that the world is a sphere approximately 2,000 years before it was popularly accepted in the year 1500. In other words, they came to the truth which followed 2,000 years of scoffing of it until Western civilization agreed to it. How did they do it? They had many proofs, but one of their proofs was is that they measured the shadows cast on the moon by the earth during an eclipse and concluded it could be caused only by a sphere. Now this is going back 2,500 years ago, when they did not have high tech. They had their minds instead. Another example, the Greek civilization were known as the fathers of engineering, architecture, art. Various students that studied art or engineering have told me that they learned that the basic principles were the Greek principles. The beauty and the perfection of theirs was unsurpassed. When they used to design a beautiful building with beautiful pillars, they would take into consideration that when you look at this from a distance, the vision of the eye is somewhat broken, and so does not look perfectly straight. So they used to take this into consideration in their design. And a student once told me at university that even their decorative designs, what was put there not only for the building purposes but for the decorations, also went along with this plan, which they say was inconceivable. Today they say is inconceivable. The word democracy is a Greek word. It seems that this concept also was developed by the Greeks. The fact is that any study that starts with geo, for example, geography, geometry, geology, were all Greeks. Geo in Greek means earth. Graphy, graphics in Greek means to write. Trigonometry was developed by the ancient Greeks. Archimedes, he developed great principles that are still being used today, 2,500 years ago. The Greek language, we have what is known as the ABCs, alpha, beta, that was Greek in origin. And it was written not left to right like we. It was written not left to right like we write today, but right to left, like Hebrew was, and other old Semitic languages. According to the sages, ancient Greek was probably the most perfect and beautiful languages of all the 70 languages of the 70 nations. Sport. They dedicated themselves to this, to the perfection of the body. We have today what was known as the Olympics or other such games. These are all Greek words: Olympics, marathon, discus, javelin. All comes from them. So this gives you an idea, an inkling of what they were. The Maral brings that there's a basic difference between the seichel, the intellect of the person, and the guf, the body or the heart of the person. The body strives to fulfill its satisfactions, to satisfy its desires. Whether it's right or wrong or true or false, this is what the body is going to strive for. The body's hungry, it wants to eat. The heart also strives to fulfill its emotions, its desires, its love, its hate, its envy, whatever it might be. Also, regardless if this is true or if it's false or if it's good or evil. But when it comes to the mind, the intellect, the brain, is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a person, which constantly strives to free itself from the influences of the body and from the influences of the heart. And the brain seeks that what is true. The brain seeks perfection. The brain seeks that what is good. And if sometimes it becomes mekulkel, it goes off in the wrong direction, it's not because of the intellect. It's because of the influences that the body and the heart have over the brain. Now, therefore, for a person to come to great heights in wisdom, he's going to have to use his mind and his intellect. And he's going to have to free his intellect from all of the influences of the body and the heart. And he's going to need an enormous objectivity. And this is why the mind has to be objective. Once the mind is influenced by ulterior motives or external motives, then objectivity is lost, truth is lost, and no longer can there be the quest, the exploration, and the quest for absolute truth. This is why the sages tell us that the quality of a person who seeks truth at all costs is that of Azus. Azus means courage, even aggressiveness, even to be brazen. And for example, the Torah commands us by the Dayonim, the judges, they have to seek the truth at all costs. They are not allowed to let anything influence their decision except the truth itself. So it states by the Dayonim, Lo yaguru mivneish, they're not allowed to be intimidated by any man. Midvar sheket yirchok, they have to further distance themselves from everything that's false. They're not allowed to be influenced by falsehood. Ki hasheched yaver ein pikhim, they're not allowed to take money or accept favors from any of the litigants, because that will have an influence on them. Ein marach min medin, they're not allowed to show emotions of compassion when they judge between two people. Were they more compassionate to one than the other? Because the chokhmah, the wisdom, is exactly what is upright, neither to the right or to the left. While all of these other powers and influences turn a person either to the right or to the left. And this is what is known as Azus. And this is the opposite of being intimidated. That's why it states that if a person wants wisdom, he has to be as kinomer, courageous, can't back up. He has to seek what is true and go for it. He has to be courageous like a leopard. A leopard is known as the most courageous and brazen of all of the animals. And this is why when Daniel saw their image, he saw it in the form of a leopard. We have a Mishnah in Masecht Ovis where it states, Lohabayshin Lemeg. Those who are very bashful and shy will not be able to learn well. The Maral says it's not telling us because he won't ask questions. No. That's simple, that if you're not going to ask, you're not going to learn. But it's because a person who is shy and bashful, who is timid, this is just the opposite of the Midas HaChochma, the quality of the intellect. The intellect is not timid, and the intellect is not bashful. If it is, no longer is it the intellect. No longer is it the mind. The mind seeks the truth at all costs, while the timid one backs off. If there's a little too much noise on the right or to the left or in front of him, he backs off. And that's why Lo Habayshin Lemeid, that someone who is shy by nature, who is very bashful, he does not have this courage, cannot come to the truth. And that's the opposite of the quality of Azus. The Gemara says, Yisrael Azin Shebumas, the most courageous of all of the nations, was in Israel. And the Torah is called Az. And the Torah is compared to a fire, Eish Dos. And there is nothing as aggressive as a fire. Notice a fire, water, if it comes to a dam, it'll turn to the right, it'll turn to the left. Fire keeps going. The fire will try to consume anything that's in its path and will not be influenced. And the Torah is this way because the Torah is the ultimate quest for the perfect truth. So this is why they were in the form, he saw them in the form of a leopard, and he saw them Nechoshes Kaper, which is the fiercest of all metals. It rejects all foreign influences on it. And with four wings. The four wings represented that there's no gvul. See, many times we are limited. Many times we are afraid. Fear is a limitation, or other such causes. When it comes to wisdom, there is no limits when it comes to the truth of wisdom. And the four wings represented in all directions. And this was the Greek Empire. The Medrash tells us that they had Kovod HaTorah. They had great honor for the Torah of Israel. It states in Medrash Rabbah, Vayikra Yud Gimel Hey, that Alexander Moktin Katchomil. Later on, Alexander became the Alexander the Great. He was their king at a later stage. It used to say on him that when he would see Reb Shimon HaTzadik, the Tanna Reb Shimon HaTzadik, he would say Baruch Hashem Elokecha Shel Shimon HaTzadik. He would say a Baruch on Shimon HaTzadik, because they had great kovod for the Torah. They could recognize what it was. And the fact is that they came once to the Chachomim and they asked if the Torah could be written in the Greek, in the original Greek language, which is a whole discussion in the Gemara, in Masech, the Megillah, in the Mishnah, where some did not allow it, others did allow it, because they could admire what the wisdom of the Torah was. Now, this gives us an idea of who they were. Today, in our generation, in our times, we are very far from wisdom. Not like people like to think, that we are the advanced age. See, we're very far from wisdom. It's all the chokhmah min ha'olam. Wisdom has been lost from the world. We are so far from it, we don't even recognize that it's lost from the world. And the reason for this is because the prevailing empire that rules today are the offsprings of the Roman Empire. Roman Empire, Edom, that was the offspring of Esau. He is the father of Western civilization, Western culture. And the Chazal have something else to say on him, just to the contrary of what they said on the Greek Empire. It states firstly on them that they're Reish HaMachshisim. Their quality is destructive, to destroy. The Greeks were constructive. They built. They built cornerstones which lasted the world till now. They were destructive. They wanted to destroy everything that came into their hands and to exploit everything that came into their hands. It states they were reitfei tanugim, tanugi gashmi. They were interested in physical luxuries and to amass physical wealth so they could have more luxury. We live in centuries of destruction, centuries of wars, of exploitation. The fact is, to the knowledge of history, there was never any problem of ecology until our times. More recent times. Actually, when Donil saw them, he saw an animal that was stamping on everything to break everything. Then they are known as the great liars, because they are the descendants of Esau, and Esau was side befeef. Esau was the one who constantly deceived. Even Yitzchak was deceived by him, by his falsehood and his false piety, by his false image. Esau was the chazir who would hold out his hoofs and say, "Ru'u, look at me, I have kosher hoofs, I am kosher," but meanwhile he was the ultimate of treif, he was the ultimate of lie. And the Chazal bring that in the Torah he was called Ochicho HaGodl, the big brother of Yaakov. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "You call him Ochicho HaGodl, I call him Ochicho HaKotan. You might call him the big brother, I call him the little brother, because he's the bozui, he's the disgraceful one. His power will be enormous, his power of destruction will be unparalleled," the Chazal tell us. And this we've seen, his power of destruction. "But I call him Ochicho HaKotan, the little one, because there is no real greatness in him. Greatness to build, there's not. Greatness of wisdom, there's not. There is greatness of evil and destruction in him. And therefore I call him Ochicha Koton. And the Medrash brings that in Avram, when he had a dream and he saw there was a gozel, Esav is compared to a gozel. Gozel is a bird. But why is he compared to the gozel? Because that bird's name comes from gzela, thief. The Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Esav is a thief. Everything that the Romans will possess, they will have stolen from others. It's very interesting that students told me, they said when they studied art, they studied architecture, they said the Roman art and architecture was a cheap imitation of Greek art and architecture. It's an imitation. They stole it. The Romans also have Olympics. See? They also have marathons. We have it. We live in European culture. They also have all of the same sports that the Greeks had, but with one difference. Today you read about the Olympics, you read about steroids, you read about billion-dollar television rights, you read about beer and cigarette advertising, you read about the world capitals competing for the venue because of the enormous financial prosperity it will bring them. They're not even ashamed of it. That's how they get it through the city councils. Look at the financial prosperity that we'll have from this. When by the Greeks, this was a dedication. This was a religion. And that's why today it is very difficult for us to even recognize what wisdom is anymore. If you take today, what is the world great in? Not the arts and the cultures, the wisdoms of the goyim. These were the wisdoms. We're not talking about the Torah wisdoms or the wisdoms of the nations of the world. They, commercialization or exploitation, communication, advertising, images, profiles. This is what our world has left a mark on. And this is totally contrary to the ancient Greek Empire. Now, it's important for us to know, because it's very difficult for us to have a good conception in this, because of what we, of the world we live in today. You don't find people today who will dedicate their lives for the quest of truth, for the sake of truth itself. They want to know what is the bottom line, what will be in it for me. But it's important for us to know this, because in this way it's similar to Torah. Torah is a quest for the ultimate truth, for the mere sake of the truth. And this is why this empire was so attracted to want to capture all of this. And at the same time, so many of the Jews fell to the wayside under the Greek influence. It was attractive to them. If this is the case, and they were so wise, so where was their error? The error was as follows. It is true, im yesh chokhma bagoyim tamim, if there's wisdom in amongst the nations of the world, believe it. But there is a greater wisdom. The wisdoms of the world, of the physical world, are known as the Chochma Tachtema, the lower wisdoms. There is a greater wisdom, which is the foundation for even those wisdoms. And that is what is known as the Chochmah Elyono, the higher wisdoms. And that was a wisdom that's not from this world, but that comes from worlds beyond. And this is the Torah. And this, the Greeks refused to accept. Now, wisdom is called a light because it is because of our minds and our intellects that we're able to see. An eye we can see physically, but we need further guidance. That's because of our minds. So therefore it's called a light. And light is something which the more physical something is, the less light there is. For example, if you want the brightest light, take an airplane and fly high. There you'll see the brightest light. You go to the sun, you'll have the purest light, which is the source of all physical light in this world. You come into the lowest atmosphere, already the light has foreign elements in it. You'll come to the earth, it's not much light. You'll dig deep into the earth, or you'll go deep into the seas, there'll be total darkness. The more physical something is, the less light. Torah is called a light, ki ner mitzvah v'torah or, because it is the source even for the sun. The Torah states that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, where did the light come from? The Chazal say he created the light from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from the Holy of Holies, from the Oren. Where the Oren HaKodesh is supposed to be, the Oren is called from the word Or, because it's Kul Or, it's all light. Just like there is a physical light that nourishes the physical world, there's a spiritual light that nourishes the sun and the physical world. And this came from above. And this came from the Torah. And it came through the Beis Hamikdash, because Mishom Yotzo Or LeOlam, from there light went out into the world. And it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. It states HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kul Or. He's all light. He gave from his light to the world. This is why Torah and mitzvahs are known as a light. And the Evamnim, the Greeks, that held themselves as such great lights, they would have been had they had worked in partnership with Torah. But they tried to be mevatel, they tried to extinguish the Torah. The sages refer to them as cheshech. Hayavonim shehechshichu eseinehem migzeirosun. Cheshech is darkness. Because if you extinguish Torah, you are extinguishing the light which brings physical light into the world. So instead of using their light for light, they used it for darkness. An example to this: when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the sun was many, many times brighter than it is today. After the first man sinned, the light was extinguished. So this was their mistake, and this was the great victory of Israel, the Hashmonaim, the Maccabees. And the miracle was through light, to show that the light of Torah, which is the ultimate of all wisdoms, and the source of all wisdoms in this world, will not be extinguished. This is what we celebrate on Hanukkah. Now, what can we learn from this? One very important principle that we learn from here: what Torah is. We have to realize that Torah is an enormous wisdom. It's a wisdom which surpasses even the greatest wisdoms of the ancient Greek Empire, which was a true wisdom and served as cornerstones for the world ever since then. Not like many think, unfortunately, in our times. And this is something we have to be on guard from because of the times that we live in. We live in times of superficiality, as we mentioned. Superficiality. This is good if there's a good bottom line, a good price for it. This is good if this is what you could make out of it, or this is what you could have from it. Not like many think that Torah is some type of religion, like other religions. It's a book of instruction on how one should fulfill all types of practices and customs that are superficial, that are shallow, and emphasis on the external, like we spoke about a few weeks ago in Ashir. That's not Torah. That's a disgrace to Torah. Because how could that be Torah if Torah is a far greater wisdom than the wisdom of the ancient Greeks, which 2,500 years ago, without high tech, were coming to conclusions that we are still building on today with our high tech. To the contrary, we must realize that the Torah is an enormous wisdom, together with its mitzvahs and together with its sages, that there is nothing in the entire world that can compare to it. Because it's not a wisdom of this world, it's a wisdom with its sources in worlds beyond. And that's what the sages told us, that if someone will tell you there is wisdom in the world, believe him, there is wisdom. But if they will tell you that there is Torah in the world amongst the nations, do not believe them. She'ein Torah rak b'Yisrael. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give his Torah to the whole world, but it was only Israel that stepped forward to accept it. Heim azin bam umes. They are the courageous of the ones of the world, and they accepted it. Now this is, I'll give you a few examples. If Torah was a religion, like other religions, for practices, and it was shallow and superficial, why do we find so much emphasis on the study of Torah? It says, "Vigisa b'yemim v'layla," that you shall study this Torah every day and every night. And the halacha is, it's brought in Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, that every Jew of Israel is obligated to study Torah every day and every night, all the days of his life. Why is it necessary so much study? You don't find that by other religions. Every day and every night, all the days of his life. Vishinantum levanecho, the prime mitzvah is that you shall constantly teach this to your children and your disciples. Or le'elam ha-talmud kodem, always give priority to the study of Torah, because only then will one come to deeds. Or ein bur yerechet v'le'am oretz chosid. It states that the empty one cannot fear sin. The ignorant one cannot become righteous. This is contrary to all of the religions of the world. Just contrary. All of the religions of the world, you want to become righteous, so you be righteous, finished. You want to fear sin, you fear sin. What does it mean? What is it? Exclusive? Yes, it's exclusive. Ein bo yerechet. The empty ones cannot fear sin. Vele amor es chosid. And the ignorant one cannot be righteous. Because reish is chochma yeres Hashem. Because it's from the deepest wisdoms, even surpassing the wisdoms of the ancient Greek Empire, which we have no conception in, perception in. And through these wisdoms, this wisdom, you can come to fear Hashem, but not without it. This is what our sages tell us. Entails all of the time. This was the constant emphasis, the constant hammering. I remember Mordechai Katz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, my Rebbe used to say, a person, he says, who does not strive for wisdom, how can he study Torah? When he chokmaschem beinechem bein agoyim, this is our wisdom. The person is a empty person, a shallow person. He's not interested in chokhmah. So how can he come to Torah, which is the deepest and the greatest chokhmah of all chokhmahs? Constantly, they would speak of the unending madregas, levels in Torah, in the wisdom of Torah, and in the wisdom of mitzvahs that one would constantly come to, or could come to, or strive to. And it was a labor. When they spoke of learning, entails, it was not a matter of learning a certain number of years in the yeshiva, or kollel. The fact is, kollel was non-existent just about when I came to the yeshiva. When I came to Tells, there was about 200 in the yeshiva, and there was one in the kollel. Later on, over a period of a number of years, it was built up to 5, and they used to learn 2 years, 3 years in the kollel. This wasn't the emphasis. Learning was a way of life. Whether a person was in yeshiva, or a person was in kollel, or whether a person was a shoemaker, learning was the way of life. Rav Gifter used to tell me, he says, I never learned in a kollel. Here you have a Godel Hador. He says, I never learned in a kollel. So where did he learn? Wherever he was, he learned. Whatever he was doing. This was their way of life. It wasn't limited to particular situations. Those that were in Siberia learned in Siberia. They were in Shanghai, they learned there. Wherever they were. This was Torah. And constantly striving to higher levels, unending levels. By Rav Gifter, never did he stop speaking like Posuk Puma. Never did he stop speaking about Yegiyas HaTorah, labor in Torah. You want to understand Torah, you have to labor in it. And never did I see anyone labor in Torah like Rav Gifter. You want to understand the Gemara, you have to labor in it. A Rashi, a Tosfos, a Ramban. He could labor hours after hours, years and years. For what? To understand the quest of truth. For what purpose? The purpose of finding what the truth is, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's truth is. That purpose. And he never stopped speaking about it. And never stopped laboring. And this is no surprise that it should come. This was Torah universally. But it's certainly no surprise that it should come from Litvish Jews, who had an enormous impact and influence on their way of thinking by none other than the Vilna Gaon and the old Tells thereof, Rabbi Yosef Leib, writes in one of the Shiridas. My son Avromi showed me this. It's a Shiridas in Morishenim Kevalochim, the second Chelek. He quotes, he's speaking of how great previous generations were, although he says the Vilna Gaon lived almost in his, they almost spanned the same generation. The Gaon died before 1800, and Rabbi Yosef Leib lived in the late 1800s. And the Chaim Volozhiner's Talmud, their lives might have, I'm not sure, but might have even overlapped a little. And he's showing how great the previous generations were. He writes here that Reb Chaim Volozhin, the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, writes in Hagdoma to Safra Ditzniusa, a sefer. He says that one time it was the first day of Pesach, and a few of the Talmidim were sitting next to the Vilna Gaon by his house, And he says, when it came to a yantif, the simcha of the Gaon was unending. He says it was something to see the enormous simcha and chedva on his face. Here was the first day yantif, and they noticed that it wasn't the same. His face was not the same as it should have been. So one of the Talmidim asked him, why does the Rebbe look down today? So he said, first he didn't want to answer, and they kept pressing him. So he said, all right, Daiga Belev Ish Yasichena Lachedim, is a posuk. Person has something heavy on his heart, let him speak it over with someone else, it'll make it lighter. He says, generally I never reveal these things, but I'm going to do it because of this reason. Last night, that was Pesach night, when I went to sleep, he says, Eliyahu came to him. And on the posuk in the Torah, Alu Zeba Negev, one posuk in the Torah where the Maraglim were told to go up to the Negev, he says that Eliyahu revealed to him Chidushei Torah, Torah that he had never heard before, that was out of this world. And when I woke up this morning, I was so excited of what I had learned that night that immediately I started to think about it before I made Birchas HaTorah, the Brochas on the Torah. Now there's a machlekes, there's a dispute. Many hold that you can think in Divrei Torah before you make the Brochas. You cannot speak in Divrei Torah. But the Gaon himself holds that you're not even allowed to think in Torah before you make the Brochas. So he says, Nenashti, I was punished for it. And take of this alma mimeni, and all of this Torah was forgotten. And that's why I am so sad. So the Talmidim said, they gave him a nechoma, and they said, Hashem Yisborach yachzil Rabbeinu as avedosei. Kodesh Baruch Hu should return to our Rebbe the lost, what he lost. After time went on, one of the Talmidim asked the Gaon, did he ever remember what was taught to him? And he said, yes. He says, he knows why he forgot it, but then Eliyahu came again and taught it to him. And he knows why it came back to him. And he said, what was it? It was 2,260 interpretations. 2,260 interpretations on that pasuk. And he says, in each interpretation gives a person a different comprehension in the whole creation, each one of the 2,260 interpretations of that posuk. So we can see why they were so influenced. Their Torah is an unending wisdom. The Gemara in Sukkah tells us and of Chof Ches, it says Hillel HaZaken had 80 students. 30 were so great that the Shechina could rest on them like Mesha. 30 were capable, so great that they could stop the sun like Yeshua. And 20 were medium. The greatest was Yenis and Menuzel. The smallest was Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai was the Godel Hador, the leader of the generation at the time of the Churban by the Romans. So, Omro Lava Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai. They don't tell us about the greatest, they'll tell us about the smallest. Lahiniach, he did not leave over anything from Mikro, Mishne, Gemora, Halochas, Agodes, Diktuke, Torah, Diktuke, Seifrim, Kalim, Vechamurim, Xeris Shofes, Tekufes, Gematirais, Sichas, Malachi, Ashores, Sichas, Shadim, Sichas, Dekolim, Misholes, Kevsim, Misholes, Shualim, Dover Godel, Dover Cotton, Dover Godel, Maise, Mekove, Dover Cotton, Abais, Dubai, Verova. He learned, it lists off things here in learning, in Torah, that on a number of them, Rashi says, I do not know what it's speaking about. This is what he learned in his lifetime. Not he learned, he didn't leave over. This is what he learned. Now, the Gemara asks, if this was the smallest, so what was the greatest? Yonasan ben Uzziel. And Yonasan ben Uzziel, it states that when he would sit and study Torah, the Torah was like a fire. Tosfos explains because it was like Torah when it was given at Sinai. And when it was given at Sinai, the Torah was so rejoicing that it was fire. So a bird, any bird that would fly over, would be consumed in the fire. And one final Gemara. The Gemara brings in Masechet Psochim that we learned not long ago. And of Chof Ches. When we speak of the quest for truth and the quest for objectivity, Gemara brings, and Psochim Daf Chof Beis Omed Beis. Sanyo, Shimon Hamsuni, Viamri Lo Nechemya Hamsuni. Hayedeh is called S in Shibatorah. Many times in the Torah it states S. Now S is a word that does not have to be there. Bereish is Bore Lekim, Es HaShomayim V'Es HaOretz. It says, the heavens, the earth, could have said Shomayim V'Oretz. Es is like a prefix, it doesn't have to be there. So whenever it was there, so Shimon Amsuni, or Nehemiah Amsuni, would expound from that as it comes to include, besides the heaven, or besides the earth, it comes to include something else also. So every S in the Torah he darshan. Until finally he came all the way to Devorim, near the end of the Sefer Torah, Devorim Yud. And it says, Es Hashem Lekecho Tiro, that you shall fear the Lord your God, and it says an S, which means that not only you shall fear the Lord your God, but someone else also equal to him. When he came to that, he said, what can we include that you should have the same fear, the fear that you have for Hashem, you should share that with someone else? And he says, no. He says, this S you cannot darshan, you cannot expound from. The Talmidim asked him, if this S you cannot expound, so what will happen with all of the other S-ing that you did? He said, I retreat. I rescind all of my other droshes. And just like I'll receive reward for dashing them, I'll receive reward also for giving up, for scrapping these droshes. Because now I realize that they're all false. Rav Gifter, when he once said this over, he said that from Rishain to Sheni, in the beginning of the Sefer Torah, just in the first person that we call up, he listed the number. It's approximately 17 Eshin. In the first Gavra, the first person that you call up in Parshas Bereishis, from Rishain to Sheni, 17. So you can imagine how many Eshin, how many times there's Esh from there to Devorim Yud. So this was a life's work of Shimon Hamsuni, where every S he set a seer on, and he learned all types of Torah from it. But now, he said, you can't come to share a Kodesh Baruch Hu's fear with someone else. Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, you should fear Hashem and someone else also. So he backed up from everything. Achibor Rebbe Kiva. Then one day Rebbe Kiva came along. V'doresh Es Hashem Elokecho Tiro L'Rabbis Tamidei Chachomim. No, you can darshan the S. And what does it mean that you should fear Hashem? You should fear Hashem and His sages. The Miri writes here, the same fear that we're obligated to have for Hashem, we must have for the sages also, for the true Tamidei Chachomim. As Hashem Elokecho Tiro, the same fear that you have for Hashem, it's inclusive also of the Talmidei Chachamim. So you can darshan. So the Gifter once told me, when he was a bocher in Yeshivas Tells, Rabbi Victor Miller who was also from the same city, Baltimore. He was in Slobodka. And he was getting married. And he was getting married in the town called Vainuta. So he asked the American Bochrim who were learning in Litta to come to the Hasana. So Gifter went to Vainuta for the Hasana. And there was a Rav whose name was Rabbi Ezra Olchra, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, a great Gaon. And this is the one of the founding fathers of the Olchra family that eventually came to South Africa. And being in that city, so the Bochrim went to visit the Rav, and they had a good time. They sat with him, and he told them all different types of Chidushei Torah. So he told them three things that Rav Gifter said that were classics, that he'll never forget his whole life. And this is one of them. He asked the Kasha, why was Rabbi Kiva able to be Marbe Talmidei Chachomim? He said, ask could come to include Talmidei Chachomim, and not Shimon Amsuni. So he says, why Shimon Amsuni couldn't do it, that we understand. Because who would have the brazenness, the audacity to say that the same fear that you have to have for the king, you have for one of his servants also. That can't be. So why Rabbi Kiva? He says, I'll tell you why. Rabbi Kiva wouldn't have either. But when he saw Shimon Amsuni, and he saw that a Talmud Chochem, a true Talmud Chochem, can go in one direction his entire life and build a whole life's work on it. And then, when he is proven wrong, he scraps his whole life's work. And the Talmidim ask him, how could you do that? And he says, why not? Torah is to seek the truth. Till now I was seeking the truth, so I would receive reward. Now by scrapping everything, I'm seeking further truth. So I'll also receive reward on that. Where do you find that? Do you ever find that in the world? That someone a whole lifetime goes in one direction and now he's proven wrong and he's willing to give up all of his work? When the Rabbi Kiva saw that, so he said, that quality is only by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because it states HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Chesom HaEmes. His emblem is truth. It's only by Hashem. But if we see it by Shimon Amsuni, we see it's also by his Talmidei Chachomim. It's also by his Talmidei Chachomim. And therefore, as Hashem Elokecha Tira can come to include that the same fear that you have for Hashem, you must also have for his Talmidei Chachomim. Because they reach endless Chochmas HaTorah and objectivity that you do not find in this world. That's why Shimon Amsuni wouldn't darshan it, wouldn't expound it. But Rabbi Kiva, when he saw that, he says, now I know what it means. Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. L'rabeis Talmidei Chachomim. This is what Rav Gifter said he heard from the Rav of Vainuta. From here, we see, firstly, from the wisdom of the Greeks, we can learn what wisdom of Torah should be and how one must approach Torah, because it is superior even to those great wisdoms. And this was the great victory of the Rabbim Biyad Ma'atim, the Shoyim Biyad Tzadikim, Zaydim Biyad Eskei Sorosecho. A good Hanukkah to everyone.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.